JC Corcoran Podcast.
Dead, dead, dead. Someday you'll be dead. Dead, dead, dead. Someday we'll all be dead. The minute we're born, we start dying. We die a little more every day. Young or old, rich or poor, there's nothing we can do to stop it. So look long at that Christmas tree. It may be the last one that you see. Decorate your house in green and red, 'cause someday you'll be dead. Dead, dead, dead. Someday you'll be dead. Dead, dead, dead. Someday we'll all be dead. It might happen in a couple months or 50 years from now. But no matter when it happens, it will seem too soon to you. So be sure on Christmas Eve when you snuggle into bed that you thank God for your family, 'cause someday they'll be dead. Dead, dead, dead. Someday they'll be dead. Dead, dead, dead. Someday we'll all be dead. Who knows how many Christmases are left in their short life? Nobody knows, that's my point. Enjoy them while you can. And so on Christmas morning, let good tidings fill your head. What a festive season. Someday you'll be dead. Dead, dead, dead. Someday we'll be dead. Dead, dead, dead. Everyone you know dead. A very Merry Christmas to you. Dead, dead.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Wednesday, December 21st, 2022, 56 days until pitchers and catchers report to Jupiter, Florida. How you doing, kids? You are at jcontheline.com. Of course, you already knew that. And we're doing one more show tomorrow. We're going to do the Christmas show tomorrow, and along with that will be the review of I Want to Dance with Somebody, which we saw last night, the Whitney Houston biopic. We'll get to Babylon here this morning in just a little while. But as I said, we got a regular podcast today, and then tomorrow we're going to be doing the Christmas show. That's going to run long. That's probably going to be over an hour tomorrow. And then we're going to take off for the holidays and then back the first week of January. So that is the schedule. We get to the weather here in just a couple of seconds, which is all that anybody is talking about. And that son of a gun, Dave Murray. Now, it seems like this storm that is moving in tomorrow, we've been talking about it for a week. And along the line, there have been reputable and disreputable weather sources. Like the Weather Channel, pretty reputable. The phone app that you have, disreputable, you know? But along the way here, there have been wild predictions of massive snowfall, you know, 8 to 12, 3 to 5, the whole thing. But while all that was going on, and forecasts were going up and down and back and forth, while all that has been going on here for the last 4 or 5 days, that son of a gun, Dave Murray, said, it's going to be a wind and cold event. There'll be a little snow, but it isn't going to be a snowstorm, it's, you know, it's going to be a couple inches. That's it. And look at this. When it's all said and done, that's what it looks like is going to happen. That it's only going to be like 1 to 3. Now, don't get me wrong. 1 to 3, when you have a lot of people attempting to travel, and while the temperatures are going to be below zero and the wind is going to be gusting to 40, 50, in some cases even 60 miles an hour. Trust me, that's going to be a problem, but not a problem like 8 to 12. See what I'm saying? And Dave almost never alters a forecast. Once he goes on record with something, it is extremely rare for him to go back and say, I know I said 1 to 3, I'm going to have to say 5 to 8. That almost never happens. It seems like when he makes up his mind, that's it. He lives and dies with that forecast, and most of the time, he lives. So I know it's one of those very popular things that people do, especially to get on social media, and there's lots of memes and jokes and everything about the accuracy or lack thereof of weather forecasts in the St. Louis area. But when it comes down to it, got to admit, they're a lot more right than they are a lot more wrong, just on a general ongoing basis. And I know a lot of times it doesn't seem like that. But if you really look at it, you know, sit there with a, you know, pad of paper and a pen and write stuff down if you want. You know, if your life is that miserable that you have both the time and the desire to do that, that's what you would find. But how, in a market the size of St. Louis, I mean, we're not Rhineland or Wisconsin, for heaven's sakes. We're a top 25 market. And how they keep hiring people who can't talk, I just don't understand it. And a lot of them are in the weather departments. We have meteorologists. How the hell do you get on TV doing the weather when you can't pronounce accumulation and you can't pronounce Arctic? The word isn't Arctic. The C just isn't, you know, silent because you decided it's too hard to say Arctic. The C is not silent. It's an arc. That's where the word comes from. And this numbnuts, Steve Templeton at Channel 4, who can't pronounce accumulation. All right, Kent, have at it.
Which is good, but going home could be a little sketchy for everybody tomorrow. Starting at midnight tonight, chance for a couple of sprinkles, maybe a light mix through the morning commute. I don't think we're going to have anything in the way of major problems during the morning commute, but there could be some slick spots. So you definitely want to tune in tomorrow morning and see how this is playing out and if it shows up any earlier or any stronger than we are anticipating at this point. However, from about mid to late morning into the evening, accumulating snow is likely across the area. It'll start to add up a little bit and those temperatures plummet. And I mean plummet. First of all, how much snow do we get? 2 to 4 inches. That's what I said earlier in the week. I'm sticking with that, too, as we look across the area. Maybe a little less to the south and a little more to the north. It's not out of the question. We can
All right,
see
so there you go. 2 to 3, which is sort of the same as 1 to 3. And there will be that line. I mean, you can see it on the thing that they just showed, that the further south you go, that's the 1 to 3. The further north you go, that's more like 2 to 4. But when I say north, I'm talking about way north out of the St. Louis, what would be considered the St. Louis area. That's good enough for me. The Chinook's Panic Aisle is officially open. Go crazy, folks. Go crazy. Oh, and one more reminder on the pipes. All right, your pipes. Been a while since it's been this cold, as it's going to get here in the next couple of days. So whatever you have to do at your particular house, we used to have to open up the little doors underneath the sink and let some warm air in there. And depending on the kind, you know your house. You know, or your apartment, you know your situation, so take that into consideration. I had a pipe burst once when I was living in Chesterfield, and it ain't pretty. Now, this is weird. This is weird because this story is just coming across right now. For those of you who are listening to the podcast early in the morning, like most of you do, they just had a big thing last weekend. All over the NFL, they were recognizing the Immaculate Reception. And if you're a football fan, you know exactly what I'm talking about, Franco Harris and that play what seemed like hundreds of years ago. Anyhow, they had the big celebration, the anniversary of the Immaculate Reception, a couple of specials and stuff like that. This morning, we get up, Franco Harris died. He just died, 72 years old. That's weird. That's a little coincidental, huh? I continue to just love these pictures that keep popping in on social media. It just seems like every day, at least three or four, sometimes even more than that, pictures from the Webb Telescope and the Hubble. You know, the Webb Telescope went up on Christmas Eve last year, got way out there on the edge of the universe, and then started taking these pictures, and it's just remarkable stuff. And with that is discussion about going to the moon again. And it's like, the moon, we're seeing the beginning of the universe with these telescopes. Fuck the moon. I want to go to like Alpha Centauri. Going to the moon now seems like a joke. As I've always said, it wasn't a big deal that we went to the moon. It was a big deal that we went to the moon in 1969. Here I am floating in my tin can. David Bowie had it right. But it's still remarkable how many people push back. You know, you always get some complete freak quoting scripture and posting memes that are so twisted out of any sense of reality. These people who just insist that everything about the universe is biblical. Forget scientists. Forget astronomers. They don't know what they're talking about, because here in this Bible verse, you see how it really happened. It makes you just want to scream, if I cared enough, I guess. But the flat earthers get in there too. It's the stupid stuff that they say. It's these people walk amongst us. Very interesting situation. Last Friday, I was going to tell you about it. I got busy this week and totally forgot. I used to do this a lot, and I don't do it that much anymore unless somebody specifically asks. But there are people who ask me questions all the time. It's like, I just feel like I've seen every movie there is to see. I wish there were some movies that I haven't seen that I could rent, especially over the holidays, and especially if you're going to be cooped up. And I always say, oh, no, there's millions of really, really good movies out there, especially if you accept the idea of independent films. If you want big, you know, things with Vin Diesel and Arnold Schwarzenegger and everything, I can't help you. But if you just want a really good movie that you'll be sitting there watching going, this is so cool. How come I didn't know about this movie? Well, I got a million of those. Like I said, I've been talking about the movie 29th Street, which is one of my all-time favorite movies and one of my favorite Christmas-themed movies. Even though you get halfway into it and you say to yourself, what the hell is he talking about? There's no Christmas in this movie. Just you know, trust me on this, okay? 29th Street, Anthony LaPaglia, Lenny Kazan, Danny Aiello. He should have won an Oscar for his performance in 29th Street, or at least gotten a nomination. We were talking the other day about Next Stop Wonderland. It would take me an hour to explain this one, but just trust me. What a wonderful movie, Next Stop Wonderland. A couple of weeks ago, we were talking about The Dish. And you got to be careful on that one, because there's a bunch of movies that sort of sound like that, are sort of titled like that, but you got to make sure you get the right one. It's called The Dish, and it is with Sam Neill is pretty much the star of the movie. There's a couple of other people that you might recognize, but he's it. So make sure you're getting the right one if you decide to rent that one. The reason I mentioned the movie thing is because I was at a Christmas party. Well, here is the deal. My daughter absolutely loves her teachers. She's crazy about her teachers. And a couple of her teachers in our area have, you know, like part-time jobs on the weekend or volunteer places on the weekend, or in a couple of cases, a family business. And sometimes on the weekend, they'll just pop up at the family business and just sort of help out. And she always wants to see her teachers in non-school environments. So she likes to go places where she thinks her teachers will be, and then just sort of hang out and watch them and talk to them. She's obsessed with this idea. So last Friday night, found out that all of the teachers from her school were having a Christmas party at a real nice restaurant, which is right sort of down the street from us. And she said, well, let's just go. And you know, it wasn't like the entire restaurant was reserved for this party. It was like one half of the restaurant, you know, they had like a big party room. And then the rest of the restaurant was open just like it would normally be. And I still remember when I was a little boy, it was probably like maybe second grade, maybe even first grade, we went on the school field trip, and it was some park that had like slides and toboggans and stuff like that. But I still remember hiding behind a tree, because at lunchtime, I remember watching the nuns at the lunch table. This is outside, you know, like a big picnic table. And I remember peering around a tree and thinking to myself, look at that. Those nuns are eating. And I still remember them sort of giggling because they knew that I was watching them eat. And I was just sort of fascinated by the fact of watching a nun eat. And so I said, okay. So we all went. Her teacher, all of her favorite teachers are there. Everybody's just hanging out. Everybody's in a great mood. The music is playing. The decorations were beautiful. The food was good. And we were just sort of sitting there. And you know, one by one, a couple of her favorite teachers would wander over to our table on the other side of the restaurant, sit down, and we would talk. And it was real loud in there. It was just a great Christmas party environment. And her favorite teacher, Mr. P, says, you know, my girlfriend is here. And I was like, oh, well, let me meet her, because I've been talking to him quite a bit. I've gotten to know him. Well, let me go meet her. So I go walking over, and now I'm in the Christmas party with the teachers. I meet Mr. P's girlfriend. She's wonderful. She's beautiful. She's really, really funny. Everything is great. And standing just off to the side of me is a tall, very attractive blonde. I mean, the kind like when she walks in the room, the fish in the aquarium stop swimming. And so somehow, I end up in the conference. Oh, I remember, because somebody said to me, oh, you know what? She's from South Africa. I'm like, South Africa? What the hell is she doing here? So I went over to her. I got her attention, got her eye contact. And all I did is I looked at her and I said, Rodriguez. And her mouth dropped open and she just looked at me like, all right, who are you? Now, some of you, a very small number of you, probably know what I'm referring to when you would go up to somebody from South Africa and say Rodriguez. And there was a movie that came out about, I don't know, what, 10 years ago? And as I'm hearing myself say that, it might be longer than that. Time is moving so fast. I'm losing all sense of time and space. Things that I thought were 2 years ago were like 10 years ago. Like, get out of here! I'm not that old! Anyhow, the movie was called Searching for Sugar Man. And it is one of the best movies I have ever seen in my life. And basically, the setup for the story is that there was a folk singer back in the 70s and 80s, and even going back further than that. And he was basically out of the Detroit area, and he would do weird things like perform on the stage with his back to the audience. But he was this great folk singer, and a lot of the reviews were like, holy shit, this guy's better than Bob Dylan. Listen to this guy. And his songwriting was really just loaded with social commentary and everything. Like a lot of people who just sort of perform in clubs and are making nothing, get great critical review, but that doesn't convert into anything. Put out a couple of albums, they went nowhere. And that was it. That was pretty much the story of the very, very small number of people in the Detroit area who 40, 50 years ago might have remembered, oh yeah, there's this folk singer, I can't remember his name. Fade to black, end of story, right? Well, somewhere along the line, some people who were very impressed with Rodriguez's work and who had friends or business opportunities or whatever in South Africa took a couple of his albums over there, got the attention of a couple of people who were on radio and sort of in the music business and stuff like that, and said, just listen to this guy. This is something coming out of the Midwest in America, and his name is Rodriguez, and just listen to this. And the people on radio were like, holy, who is this? Anyhow, long story made short, he becomes a sensation in South Africa. He's like Paul McCartney and Bob Dylan put together. He is arguably the most popular recording artist in all of South Africa. And you guessed it, Rodriguez, whose career sort of fizzled out and he just faded into obscurity, had no idea that this was going on. And then the story fast forwards where, you know, couple of guys said, we're going to try and find this guy, find out if he's dead or if he's alive, if he's alive, where he is. And the story goes on from there. And it is it's a wonderful film. And I don't want to give any more away because it'll ruin what happens. But oh my God, I got goosebumps. I'm covered with goosebumps right now thinking about this. Well, of course, she's from South Africa. She is stupefied over the idea that somebody she runs into in Central Florida knows who Rodriguez is. And we sat there and we talked for probably about the next 45 minutes about South Africa and about Rodriguez and everything like that. So, like I said, if you're looking for a movie to rent that will really, really make you feel good and is just really interesting and just something you probably haven't seen before,
there's something you can rent, Searching for Sugar Man. All right, you want to move on to Babylon? And again, tomorrow we'll do this review of I Want to Dance with Somebody, the Whitney Houston biopic, which I saw last night, so I still have to write the review. So we'll do that and then the Christmas show tomorrow. But yeah, Babylon. You've been seeing tons of commercials for this thing. And Brad Pitt and Margot Robbie, who are the stars of the movie, will get your attention when you see them in a television commercial for a movie. And the fact that they are releasing it here right before Christmas is indicative of the fact that they think that they have something. The studio, the movie studio, out in Hollywood, you know, you release a movie this time of year, it's like we always say, you get a movie out this time of year, it's Oscar bait. And that certainly seems to be the idea that they are promoting here with the movie Babylon. So here we go. I saw the movie almost 3 weeks ago, and I'm still sitting here trying to explain to you that I'm still not sure what I saw. The guy who directed this movie is the same guy who did La La Land. Now, I loved every single frame of La La Land, which was sort of like a love note to Hollywood. Babylon, probably more like a letter bomb to Hollywood. Now, it's really important for a lot of movie directors to really get your attention, grab you right at the top, in the first 5 minutes. So if I was making a movie and I said, I want to get everybody's attention, I want to shock them, I want them to know that they're in for a real, real ride here for the next 3 hours and 12 minutes, oh, I could do something like have a scene where people are covered in elephant diarrhea. But of course, nobody would do that, but it would get everybody's attention. Well, in the first 5 minutes of Babylon, everybody gets covered in elephant diarrhea. And about halfway through the movie, there is a vomiting scene. And I'm not just talking about, standard, let's say, projectile vomiting. I'm talking about vomiting to the point where you wonder how that volume of vomit could possibly be inside one person. There are inexplicable, gross, scatological, and I should say unnecessary scenes. Some of this I would actually classify as almost experimental filmmaking. You know, there was a lot of that stuff in the 60s and 70s where people were trying to do things in film and they had to experiment with stuff to just see what the audience's appetite would be. And of course, John Waters comes to mind. But those were, you know, fringe movies that would show in like the art houses and stuff. This is not what you expect or desire, for that matter, from a major studio release. I think there's a little bit of Quentin Tarantino influence in this whole thing. But if you saw Pulp Fiction, for example, then, Pulp Fiction laid side by side with Babylon makes Pulp Fiction look like Snow White. And don't get me wrong, there are sequences in this movie that are remarkable. I mean, this guy, when he wants to, he can make us feel all sorts of emotions. We saw it in La La Land. But over the course of 3 hours and 12 minutes, I believe it is. And again, here we go with another director that like Avatar, feels like he's got to make a movie that's real, real long for some reason. Somebody said to me, what's it about? And I go, it's about 2 hours too long. The story? Yeah, it's old Hollywood. Brad Pitt is good as usual. He's really good in the movie. And again, it's your typical Hollywood story. Meteoric rise, guy has everything, all the money in the world, gets all the women, the whole thing, and then his career begins to fade. And it's not pretty. While that's going on, Margot Robbie is giving it a performance that, despite the weirdness of the movie, is breathtaking and steals pretty much every scene she's in. You know, I knew she was a good actress. I guess I didn't know she was this good. And again, it's old Hollywood. It's all this, you know, period piece stuff. There are epic scenes with what looks to be thousands of extras. I mean, this is really, really epic level filmmaking. It's just that Damien Chazelle might be too weird for his own good. Tobey Maguire shows up in this movie about, I don't know, three quarters of the way through, giving one of the creepiest performances I've seen recently. Woo, man, my skin is crawling. Just think about this character that he's got in this movie. I don't do drugs, but I would imagine that some of the visceral sensations that I experienced during the 3 hours plus of Babylon would be what it would be like to be on meth. This movie really attacks your central nervous system. And again, it's important that you understand that there is incredible, incredible filmmaking that you will see throughout the course of Babylon, but it's like excessive everything. So on one level, yeah, great filmmaking counterbalanced by a bunch of just excessive, scatological, gross, inexplicable stuff that I just think he ruined his own movie. So what I would say is this. We have heard the term in the past, experienced film goers. And that just means that you go to a lot of movies. Typical average American goes to about 6 movies a year, maybe rents a lot more at home and stuff like that. But in terms of going to the theater for new release stuff, 5-6 movies, that's a typical average American. But there's also people who go see, 100 movies a year or 50, whatever. And they go to the art houses. They spend a lot of time at the Tivoli and the High Point. And they see the small films, the indie films. They see the foreign films. They see the films with subtitles. So if you're that person, then yeah, go see Babylon. But for heaven's sakes, if you're thinking, well, it's Christmas, let's go see a movie. Oh, I heard this Babylon thing is supposed to be amazing. But you think a good movie is The Sound of Music? I'm warning you right now, you don't want any part of this movie. And one of the most amusing things about Babylon is, and I'm not going to ruin anything, but at the end, in sort of like an attempt at like a cinema paradiso, where he sort of wraps things up and puts a nice pretty little bow on the end of it, even though he's been grossing you out for the last 3 hours, it comes off more like Jerry Springer's final thought. Jerry Springer used people throwing chairs at each other and swinging at each other and making horrible accusations at one another. And at the end, he would just like sit there and, like I said, try to put a pretty little bow on top of the thing at the very end. It's a hilarious attempt at futility. I'm only giving Babylon 2.5 out of 5 quirks because the general film going audience, I just don't think this is for you. It's too weird. But again, for people who are, experienced film goers, you see a lot of foreign films and stuff like that. Yeah, then go ahead and see this. But again, for the general audience, 2.5 out of 5 quirks for Babylon. And we'll do I Want to Dance with Somebody, Whitney Houston, tomorrow before we get into the Christmas show. Here's something I did not know. Mistletoe comes from the old English word mistletan, which means little dung twig, apparently because the plant spreads through bird droppings. Merry Christmas. In some European countries, it's traditional for people to leave out their shoes rather than their socks or stockings for Santa to fill. The shades of the Schmengi brothers.
In Lithuania, Christmas tradition is that the men exchange socks.
And then they take their socks off, hand them to each other, and then they put the other guy's socks on. Oh my God, The Last Polka. Man, if you can get your hands on that. Jesus, is that a funny movie. Eugene Levy and John Candy. According to the Guinness Book of World Records, the tallest Christmas tree ever cut was a 221-foot Douglas fir displayed in Seattle in 1950. 221 feet is more than 20 stories tall. Grubhub just released their year-end report, and the top trending cuisine of the year was Australian. They didn't do any particular restaurants, but on their app, they do consider Outback Steakhouse to be Australian. Australian cuisine up 531% over the last year. South African cuisine got the biggest jump, 294%. Overall, the most ordered foods were basic burritos, number one, followed by cheeseburgers, cheese pizza, Thai, chicken quesadillas, sushi, particularly California rolls, fried chicken sandwiches, Caesar salads, chicken marsala, and boneless wings. Boneless wings are nuggets, by the way, just in case you didn't know. The top breakfast order was sausage, egg, and cheese sandwiches. Number one dessert, tiramisu. Top dipping sauce, ketchup followed by ranch, buffalo sauce, honey mustard, spicy mustard. The entire report is online. This from Grubhub. New survey found almost everybody who decorates their home for the holidays does so with at least one fire hazard. 47% candles, 31% admit to using two or more extension cords plugged together, and 28% use tinsel, which can be very flammable. Less than 17% of people who put up a real tree water it daily the way you're supposed to. There's a Paul Simon tribute tonight on TV. Really looking forward to that. We just bought a new sofa sleeper because when grandma visits, she's been sleeping on an air mattress the last 3 years. When we finally figured, you know what? This is that. Let's get a sofa sleeper. So we went to one of those places that sells stuff on the weekend, sometimes damaged, sometimes discontinued, sometimes something has a little mark on it. You can save a lot of money. You know what else? You go to vegetable stands. Go to the little area they have off to the side where it's all the vegetables that don't look pretty, and so they can't put them with all the pretty-looking fruit. You can save like 50% by buying tomatoes and stuff that just are ugly. Still taste the same. But anyhow, back to the sofa sleeper, which is basically a couch when you're not using it as a bed. New research has found that the average couch lasts 8 years, has witnessed 311 arguments, suffered 316 drink spillages, been the site of 286 makeup sexual sessions, suffered 316 drink spillages, also hosts 401 naps, 8,500 hours of TV watching, 537 movies, and will swallow the remote 346 times. On average, people expect to spend $1,200 on their dream couch. But if a new couch costs too much, 71% of people would be fine with using a used one, even if it's been through spillages and makeup sessions somewhere else. Somebody else's DNA all over your couch. 61% of online daters say it's more difficult to date during the holidays, and some of the reasons include feeling pressure to commit, pressure to invite them to family gatherings, and anxiety over gift giving. This is our last live show. Tomorrow we'll do, like I said, the review of the Whitney movie and then go into the Christmas show, which is all pre-produced, pre-recorded, and then I won't talk to you until after the first of the year. It is noteworthy that I could probably tell you 10 or 15 women that I've known over the years who, at a very early age, somewhere in their teens, lost their virginity, usually on New Year's Eve. It's like somebody said a long time ago, when a guy goes to pick up a woman for a date, he's thinking in the back of his mind, geez, I wonder if she's going to let me. And all the while, she already knows. It's not fair, I tell you. I'm going to write my congressman. And Merriam-Webster has announced its word of the year for 2022, gaslighting. The act or practice of grossly misleading somebody, especially for one's own advantage. 2022 saw a 1,740% increase in lookups for the term gaslighting.
December 24th, to a chimney near you.
You better not pout.
You better not cry.
You better not shout.
I'm telling you why.
Santa Claus is coming to town. It's Santa Bug.
Jolly Saint Nick is back
in a super tinsel turbocharged eggnog burning reindeer powered funny sleigh.
Pulled by Dasher,
Dancer,
Prancer,
Vixen,
Comet,
Cupid,
Donner,
and Roseanne Barr.
Santa Bug.
Special guest reindeer,
Rudolph.
His red nose is on fire.
See the Grinch try to cripple Kris Kringle
in a crushing Christmas crunch-a-thon.
Wise men bearing gifts get in free.
Santa Bug.
He's gonna fill your stocking full of mud.
Bring your mistletoe.
Santa Bug.
Peace on earth, good wheels toward men.
Ho, ho, ho.
I'm sorry you had to hear that. All right, that's it for the J.C. Corcoran podcast for Wednesday, December 21st, 2022. 56 days until pitchers and catchers report to Jupiter, Florida for spring training. We are here every weekday morning right about this time. You can email me, JC at jcontheline.com. Facebook the showgram with J.C. Corcoran. It's time for a break, isn't it? All right, so we'll see you tomorrow with a review of the Whitney movie and the Christmas show. Have a great... Oh, also an update on the weather. And in the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.